From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, who's behind the secret door? Three separate guests coming in, and I have no idea who they are. We'll find out together. Here's what's happening, a story we've been following. The U.S. government has asked the scientific journals Nature and Science to censor data on a laboratory-made version of bird flu that could spread more easily to humans, fearing that it could be used as a potential weapon. The U.S. National Science Advisory Board for Biosecurity asked the two journals to publish revised versions of studies by two research groups that created forms of the H5N1 avian flu that could easily jump between ferrets, typically considered a sign that the virus could spread quickly among humans. The journals are objecting to the request, saying that it would restrict access to information that might advance the cause of public health. Gary Ridenour attended Hiram College, attended medical school in Mexico. Let's check in with him now on this story. Gary, this could be one of our worst nightmares, couldn't it?
Well, this is absolutely unbelievable. The National Institute of Health funded the University of Wisconsin and a research center in Rotterdam to create the deadliest biological weapon in history, and then they wanted to print it to the and tell the world how to make it. We're handing the keys out to Armageddon.
Why are we doing this? I mean, why are they playing around with Mother Nature this way, unless they want it?
That's true. The claim is that they wanted to develop this very deadly form of a bird flu so that they could study it to make a vaccine. Even if a vaccine existed, billions of people will die before the vaccine ever gets out to everybody. This is Russian roulette with a fully loaded gun.
It is. Gary, I said a couple of years ago during the H1N1 scare when they said it was going to be a pandemic, and I said, no, it's not going to happen. Don't worry. We only had a few hundred cases worldwide. But I did say this, and I qualified it by saying, but we could have one if they play around with this in the test tube and it gets out. And sure enough, it could happen.
And it's the problem is that we knew that there were seven genes that needed to mutate to make this a killer. And they found out that you only needed to mutate five of them to do this. What's the National Institute of Health doing making biological weapons? Where's the CIA and the FBI? Where's Homeland Security in this? I mean, my God, this is dangerous.
Dangerous, Gary, probably one of the biggest stories I've heard in a long time. Thank you so much. We'll continue to follow it. A Brazilian woman who has given birth to a baby with two heads admitted that she initially expected twins. She gave birth by cesarean at a hospital in Brazil with her newborn weighing 9.9 pounds. And a tribute to the religious celebrations of Christmas, she has decided to call the pair Emmanuel and Jesus. Little baby, two heads. North Korea will shift to collective rule from a strongman dictatorship after last week's death of Kim Jong-il. Although his untested young son will be at the head of the ruling, we'll see how far this works. His uncle and the military are going to run the country with him. I give that a few months. The number of new U.S. home foreclosures jumped by more than 21% in the third quarter from the previous quarter as banks moved more aggressively after a pause that began late last year. There's registered investment advisor Mish Shedlock with us. Mish, it's still a problem, and it's getting worse, isn't it?
It is getting worse. And you know what? The story behind this story is a comment by Lawrence Yun, the chief economist for the National Association of Realtors, came out today. And I'm reading this article, and I'm sitting here, I'm saying, how can this be true? Here's a statement. From a consumer's perspective, only the local market information matters, and there are no changes to local market listing service status or supply-demand balances, or local home prices. Now, I don't know if you're aware, but the National Association of Realtors just downgraded by 14-15% all of their home sale predictions going back for like 4 years. So they've been just like blatantly wrong. And I'm looking at this, and I'm looking at this statement, and I'm trying to figure out how in the heck can their local home price data be right and their national home price data be wrong by 14%. So, you know, I'm looking at this and say, can this really be true? This is what I do, though. When I don't know something, I try and call up someone that I think knows more than I do. So I called up my friend Calculated Risk, and he said, Mesh, this is pretty easy. Look at the major procedural errors that the National Association of Realtors has. They've got sampling errors. Not all of their local data was used to go into the national numbers. They've got size errors. The local areas changed in size. So if a local area changes in size, that, of course, affects the extrapolated results. They've got benchmark errors. They made benchmarks based off of 2000 census data. Well, we've got 10 years between census data. We have for sale by owner changes. The National Association of Realtors changed. We've had huge numbers of sales of people trying to sell homes themselves going on and off the national realty.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Mitch, where are these families going who have been foreclosed? Where are they going?
We do have one uptick, and I talked with this with Calculated Risk today. We are seeing an uptick in multiple family housing development, but we're not seeing anything on homes, single-family homes. We have a huge supply for years and years and years ahead. I think at least a decade. Can I get one comment in, though, on dysfunctional politics that's going on in Congress right now?
All right, go ahead.
A very quick one. We have the Democrats and the Republicans both championing tax cuts. The Senate passed a bill that's going to extend tax cuts for the unemployed to next year. The House passed a measure to do it for a year. Obama wants the measure passed. So we have the House and the Senate and the President that want to pass a tax bill. The result is no tax bill.
No, they can't agree.
It's absolutely amazing. They claim to agree, but they don't. It's dysfunctional politics.
That's politics, Mish. Thank you so much. A Houston man has told authorities that he wants to clear his conscience and pay a dollar parking ticket that he received 58 years ago. Dale Crawford of Houston sent a letter to city officials after finding the ticket among some keepsakes. He says he wants to pay the debt, even though it's a small, almost unnoticeable amount. Mr. Crawford received the ticket back in 1953, the day he was inducted into the Army. He left his 1946 Nash, some of you might remember that car, at a parking meter at an induction station. But because his father was late retrieving the car, it had a ticket. The Houston mayor says she will personally accept his payment and thank him for setting an example for others who owe debts to the city. Well, a year from now, the world will come to an end, maybe, according to some who talk about the Mayan calendar. Some others, like me, believe it could be some kind of solar event. Nonetheless, Clint Arthur joins us in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. What if this was the last year of your life? And welcome back to Coast. Clint Arthur, graduate of the Wharton Business School, believes in going for it, living each day to the fullest, which is a good way to do it. His website, thelastyearofyourlife.com, his book, Free New Power, and here he is back on Coast to Coast. So we've got a year to live, Clint. Is that it?
Well, possibly. Today is the first day of the last year of the Mayan calendar.
And that means what for us?
That's a big question that philosophers and historians and scientists have been debating for hundreds of years. Does it mean it's the end of the world? Does it mean a new age of consciousness for human beings? We don't know. All I do know is that I'm going to be living as if this is going to be the last year of my life, and I'm going to be sharing that experience with thousands of people around the world who are committed to getting everything we can out of every day that we have left.
Well, you know, when we talked back in April, Clint, and I agree with your philosophy. I mean, why waste our life by just, you know, putting things off, by not being happy? You got to live as if this is it. This is it. And enjoy yourself. And and you know, and make something of your life. And if it's a year or 10 years or a month, at least you lived it to its fullest, huh?
Absolutely. In 2010, the youngest member of the last year of your life experience went to bed on October 28th at the age of 33 and did not wake up. A week later, I was privileged to be able to speak at his funeral. And I tell you, it took a lot of courage for me to stand up there in a room full of strangers and talk about a man that I knew through his work in my program. And it was a growth experience for me to stand up there, and I know it was a growth experience for him to go through the last days of his life and try to get every bit of juice that he could squeeze out of the lemon.
Clint, what do you tell people who are pressured? You know, I just had a story before you came on. Foreclosures are going through the roof. You know, there are some people out there that just aren't making it. They're not having a great time right now. What do you say to those folks in terms of how to make this the best year of their life?
It all comes down to what you want. And it comes down to, are you willing to go for what's truly in your heart, the passion that's in your heart? And if you're not going for the passion, you're going to find yourself sleepwalking through the days of your life like a zombie. And that's not going to inspire you to get up in the morning and do your best and show up strong at work for your family and for yourself. And if you're not living with the full zest that you know you are capable of, you need to take a look inside and ask the tough questions of yourself. Where am I not pushing where I could? Where am I not expecting enough from myself? How could I get more inspiration in my life? Who am I surrounding myself, and what is their responsibility in asking me the wrong questions or pushing me in the wrong directions? Your life is what you expect your life to be. And until you're willing to change your expectations about your life, you're not going to get the fulfillment that you want. For example, last year we had a woman in the program whose name was Glenda from Kansas. And Glenda from Kansas has an alpaca farm. And she told me on the phone that every day she was running and doing and busy all day long, and she was making things happen for the alpaca goats and for her husband and for the farm, and she felt like she was not getting anything for herself. Here she was living the dream, a farmer in Kansas. I mean, it's so idyllic, and yet she had no personal fulfillment. And we looked at what she wanted for her year. Every year we write down a list of goals. And I had her go through the goals and read them to me. And she said she had wanted to create a spiritual practice for herself. And I said, what does that look like for you? She said, well, that would be like 20 to 30 minutes of yoga every day. And I said, well, Glenda, why don't you just start every day with 20 to 30 minutes of yoga so that every day you get something for you?
That's right.
And that made all the difference in the world.
Clint, why do so many people sell themselves short?
Well, I'd like to answer that question with another question, and that is, think back to where you were on New Year's Eve of the millennium. What were you doing? Were you out having good food and good wine, hanging out with family and friends, having a fun time? Well, Clint Arthur, graduate of the world-famous Wharton Business School, same business school as Donald Trump, I was driving a taxi cab that night, and I was driving around with tons of people all over Los Angeles, and I felt totally alone. And when I got home from that night, I had made $513, which was my normal weekly take-home in those days.
Yeah.
And yet, I felt like a total loser. And I crawled into bed on my little tiny boat in Marina del Rey, and I had my heavy down comforter on and all my clothes, my heaviest clothes, because it was freezing on the boat with no heat. And I opened up my favorite book, Angela's Ashes by Frank McCourt. And I started to read by the light of my flashlight. And I got distracted by my breath because it was condensing in the cold night air. That's how cold it was. And I started thinking back over my life and how I got to be that loser taxi driver on New Year's Eve. How I had graduated from Stuyvesant High School, where I had studied creative writing with Frank McCourt, the author of that Pulitzer Prize-winning book. And then graduated from the same business school and saw my fraternity brothers go on to make millions of dollars as directors of Goldman Sachs Corporation on Wall Street while I was a taxi driver. And then I moved out to Los Angeles to pursue my dream of becoming a filmmaker, like my idol, Spike Lee. And after 10 years of banging my head up against the brick wall of the Hollywood dream, there I was, the taxi driver on New Year's Eve. And I started to cry that night because I was terrified that I had thrown away all the great opportunities I would ever have and that I was never going to be able to dig my life out of the ditch I had dug for it. And I swore I was going to do everything I could to change. And I did all kinds of self-help work. I walked on fire with Tony Robbins. I did Toltec wisdom studies. I did men's power circles. And sure enough, as I changed, so did the outer circumstances of my life. And I started making money selling gourmet food. I got married to an amazing woman. She had faith in me. She let me build an addition to our house, and I built four houses during the boom, and I made a bunch of money, and I became fat and happy. But I was unfortunately obese at 236 pounds, and I was unfulfilled because I had quit writing. I had quit living my passion because I am a writer.
Yeah.
And one night I was at a men's self-help circle. It was down by LAX airport on the beach, and we had a campfire, and a man across the circle pointed at me and he said, "Dude, you don't know it yet, but you're already dead." And I didn't know what he meant, but I couldn't stop thinking about it. And shortly thereafter, I said to myself, "Well, what would I want to do if this was going to be the last year of my life?" And that is my advice for people. If you are not able to make things happen right now, ask yourself the question, if this was going to be the last year of your life, what would you really want to do? Like Steve Jobs says, I call this Steve Jobs' secret weapon, George.
Yep.
He said, "The most powerful tool I ever had was knowing that I was going to die soon, because it strips away all the fear and all the worry about being embarrassed or failure. And it just lets you focus on what's truly important."
That's interesting. Yet, and let me ask you this, though. Yet, being the cab driver, you could have made that something if you were happy doing that, couldn't you?
Well, yeah. I mean,
maybe not you, but some people.
Everybody has to know what is the passion inside of you and what is going to fulfill you. For some people, their family is their fulfillment. And
right.
For them, they have to decide, well, am I being the best father or parent that I could possibly be? And a lot of people can take their level of parenting and their level of their marriage or their level of relating with anyone to a whole new level by acting as if, hey, this is the last year of my marriage because I'm going to be dead at the end of it. And if it's scary, a lot of people think it's scary. And if it is scary, you know what? That's part of the process, because fear is good. Fear makes you cherish what you have.
I like that. I like that philosophy, and it's the way to do it. TheLastYearOfYourLife.com, that's Clint's website. And in a moment, we'll take some phone calls with him, and maybe you want to tell us what you would do if this was TheLastYearOfYourLife.com. Sadly, Clint, for some people, it really may be the last year of their life. You know what?
Well, unless you're over the age of 79, it most likely is not going to be the last year of your life, because the average age of the average life expectancy in the United States is 79.06 years. So it most likely is not going to be the last year of your life. But if you want to find out about how to live this year as if it's going to be the last year of your life, I've got four free videos for people to find out and watch. They can get those videos for free at the website, thelastyearofyourlife.com.
Okay, well, stick with us. We're going to come back in just a moment with Clint Arthur. And we'll take your phone calls, and also I would like to know what you would do if this happened to be the last year of your life, and live that way, especially live that way. Next hour, we begin our Who's Behind the Secret Door. It's three separate guests throughout the evening. I have no idea who they are. You're going to have some fun with me trying to figure out who they are when they come on. And if you need to email me, we make it very easy for you as well. That's George at coasttocoastam.com. George at coast to, got to put the T-O in there, coasttocoastam.com. We'll be back in a moment. Clint Arthur, our special guest, website linked up for you at coasttocoastam.com. Well, you can be a member of the Coast Insiders Club. It's less than 25 cents a day. What great benefits there. Downloads, podcasting, participating in monthly chats. Simply go to coasttocoastam.com. and join the Coast Insiders Club. You'll see it right there at the top of the homepage. When we come back in a moment with Clint Arthur, we'll continue talking about the last year of your life and also take your phone calls right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie, Clint Arthur with us. This is the last year of your life and your phone calls as well. What do you tell people who don't believe that this could be the last year of their life, that they won't live that way and that they put things off, that they can't go for their dream, Clint?
Well, I want to tell you that my appearance on Tonight Show was something that was predetermined 5,000 years ago by the Mayans. I mean, what are the chances, George, that I would be alive and that you would be alive on the first day of the last year of the Mayan calendar, December 20, 2011? They created this calendar 5,000 years ago. We could have been born at any time, and here we are. And how do we know that the world is not going to be over at the end of December 21st, 2012? We don't know.
We don't know.
And if you're a person who's listening to me, to my voice, this very well could be the last year of your life. And what are you waiting for? What are you saving those frequent flyer miles for? Do you think it's all gone forever? It's not.
All right, next up, let's go to Michael in Lincoln, California. You're on with Clint Arthur. Michael, go ahead.
Hi, George and Michael.
Yeah, hi.
I can say what I'm going to do the last year because this is the last year of my life. I'm writing a book about Vietnam. I'm writing a book about the different wisdom and things I've learned that I can pass on to my children and my grandchildren. And I'm also, every minute I get to spend with my grandchildren and my children, I just cherish it. And
good for you.
All the good that I can do for other people, I love to do it. It's a pleasure and a privilege. And I just love everybody. That's all. And I want everybody to have a really happy New Year and a Merry Christmas and Happy Hanukkah, whatever. Just love each other. That's all.
You know, I wish more people would think that way, Clint. What a planet we'd have, huh?
It would be awesome. If everyone just loved themselves more, that's the first step. In the last year of your life, the first step to having the best year of your life is loving yourself more. And if everybody would love themselves more and love each other more, it'd be a much better planet.
I would say that people who do not enjoy their life don't care too much about themselves, do they?
That is the key to it all. Self-love is everything. And it's so easy to start loving yourself more. Here's a simple thing that you can do this week over the next 7 days to bring more self-love into your life. And this is how I stopped being a cab driver and started being successful in business. See, when I was a cab driver, my idea of a good meal was two Whopper Juniors and a six-pack of Miller Lite, long neck bottles. And then I had an injury, and my chiropractor suggested that I try to heal my body with nutrition. And it turned out that what I needed to heal my body was raw oysters, clams, and scallops, according to this book that he had. And those are my favorite foods. And I said, well, if that's going to heal my body, I'll invest the money in the expensive food that is oysters, clams, and scallops, because I love those. And when I started feeding myself with love, I started making money, and my whole life turned around. So for the next 7 days, if you want to try and bring more love into your life, make a list of your favorite foods. Write them down right now. Get a pen and paper. Write down your favorite foods, seven of them, and for the next 7 days, feed yourself one of those favorite foods as a special event each day. And you will see at the end of those 7 days, you're going to love yourself a whole lot and your whole life.
That's good advice. Next up, let's go to Ted in Columbia, Tennessee. Hey, Ted, thanks for calling.
How are you guys doing tonight?
We're good, Ted.
I've run into a little problem with this whole 2012 end of the Mayan prediction.
Okay, tell us what.
Now, the Mayans predicted the end of their calendar according to their time scale. Now, our modern time scale is based on Jesus' birth, which would be the difference between B.C. and A.D. Now, the Mayan, the problem is, and the fears that everyone's having is from the Bible revelations and their predictions for the end time.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's the problem. According to, if you read the Bible at Matthew 2nd chapter, it says that Herod went and killed all the infants, and Joseph took all the people, his kids, and Mary off to Egypt. And they stayed there for you know, a couple, 4 years. And then he received notice that Herod died. Now, if you look under the Encyclopedia of Herod's life, he lived from 73 B.C. to 4 B.C. Now, if he died at 4 B.C. and the calendar starts at Jesus' birth, there's 8 years wrong. So the actual end date of this 2012 should actually have been 2004. And if you look at what happened in 2004, besides Bush being reelected, we had the tsunami, then we had Katrina, you had all those tornadoes, we had the stock market crash and everything else. Now, if you go back to that Revelation, it says it's supposed to be 7 years of nastiness at the end, and then it'll be 7 years of prosperity, and then supposedly Jesus comes back. So I'm looking at 2012 should be the end of all this bad stuff that's been happening, and we go into 7 years, 8 years of good stuff, and there's really nothing to really worry about. What we should have worried about it was back, you know, 8 years ago. Does this make sense?
That's a really interesting comment. I'm not a biblical scholar, but I am a very spiritual person, and I personally believe that these Mayan people were talking about a spiritual rebirth and a new age of spiritual awareness where people would cherish their lives. And either way, even if it happened in 2004, if it's happening now, whatever the cause of it is or the answer is, this is an opportunity for all of us to take this moment and say, you know what, I'm going to live my life as if I only have 1 year left to live, and allow that urgency and that ticking clock that Steve Jobs talked about to give us a new sense of personal power, to identify what's truly important, and to make three goals happen in our lives. Number one, to accomplish everything on our bucket list. Number two, to create a legacy by bringing out what's truly special within each of us. And number three, by having more fun than we've ever had in any 1 year's time. And if that sounds like a good idea, then please come and join me at thelastyearofyourlife.com, and we can all do it together, and we can thank the Mayans for it.
But, Clint, though, it doesn't mean, though, that people should be reckless in this last year of their life. You know, some people will take incredible chances. It might be thrilling, but, you know, I would rather find out how deep the lake is before I jump in. So what do you recommend there?
I am not telling anybody to jump out in front of a bus or do anything stupid. I am telling you to look inside yourself and find out what you are truly passionate about, what's truly the song in your heart, and to focus on those important things that are unique to you and that make you the most special human being, and to focus on that and bring it out, bring it forth, and to dive into life with a gusto like you never had before, because you're living as if it's going to be the end.
Let's go to Mark, Toronto, Canada. Hey, Mark, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hi. Hi, George. Hi, hey. Glenn. The point I'm making is I really don't understand why you're calling it living at the last year of your life.
Okay. Well,
yeah, I'll let you explain that. Go ahead, Glenn.
Yeah, the Mayans say that the calendar, that their calendar ends on December 21st, 2012. And I'm saying, if you live as if this is going to be the last year of your life and you just go for it as if you're going to be checking out at that point in time, I advise you to have a death ritual at the end of that experience. The people who do this with me, we have a death ritual. It's intense. And the more realistic and the more you can believe that that death ritual is real, the more powerful it is for you to be reborn the next day. And the whole goal of this is to give it everything you've got for these next 12 months, and then on December 21st, 2012, we are going to have death rituals, and we're going to act as if it's going to be the end for us, and then we get reborn, and then we can face the rest of our lives and live with the legacy that we've created this year. Like the first year I did it, I built a factory for my company. I wrote a book, which has gone on to be a best-selling book, What They Teach You at the Wharton Business School. And I lost weight and got healthy, and I recommitted to my marriage, so that here we are 10 years into our marriage together. And those are the legacies that I'm living with in the years beyond the first time I did this experience. And that's why you should act as if this is going to be the last year of your life, so you can start fresh when it's all over.
And it doesn't mean, Clint, obviously, that you think we only have a year to go. It means live like you do.
Yeah, live as if this is going to be the last year of your life. It's a construct. It's an idea. It's just a context for living, getting up every day and saying, okay, this is the last December 21st that I'm ever going to have, because the next time I come to December 21st, it's going to be my death day. And so I've got to make it happen right now. I've got to do the things that I really want to do. I had a book burning inside of me, George. I always wanted to write it down. What did I really learn at the best business school in the world? And because I was living as if it was the last year of my life, I wrote that book, What They Teach You at the Wharton Business School, and it became a bestseller. I had given up on writing. I had studied creative writing with a Pulitzer Prize-winning author, the greatest writer of our time, Frank Bacourt, and I quit because it had put me behind the wheel of a taxi cab on New Year's Eve on December 31st, 1999, and I felt like a loser because of it. But because I was living as if it was going to be the last year of my life, I had the courage to risk failure one more time and to give it one more shot, and I wrote my book, and now I'm a best-selling author.
And that is hard to come by. Believe me, it's not easy. Not easy at all. One thing I'd advise people, even though you live like it's the last year of your life, don't deplete your bank account by the end of the 12 months, just in case, right?
I agree. However,
But enjoy yourself.
Definitely enjoy yourself. Like, you know, I had been coveting this Rolex watch, and I was saying to my wife, this was last year, I was saying, man, I love that Rolex watch. It's just calling my name. And she goes, well, what are you waiting for? It's the last year of your life. And today, I'm a guy who wears the Rolex watch that I've always dreamed of, and it makes me so happy every day. I enjoy my money, and I'm out there in action, spending my money and living without fear that I'm going to run out of money. I'm making it happen because I have that attitude every day that this day is the day that I need to make it happen.
And you know what? That Rolex will outlive all of us, and it'll go on and on. Let's go to Stephanie in Yuma, Arizona. Stephanie, you're on with Clint Arthur. Go ahead.
Yes. Hi, George. Hi, Clint.
Hi.
I'm kind of one of those skeptics, and I mean, I do believe maybe it could be the end of the world, but let's just pretend it is. Why try to sell me your video and your book and not just give them away? You're not going to be here.
I'm giving you the videos. Go to thelastyearofyourlife.com and you can watch the videos for free. Okay? There are four free videos there. Just click on the button at the top of the page. It says, click this button to get four free videos, and it'll teach you how to come alive in 2012. It'll share with you some amazing stories of triumph that people have had so that you can be inspired to also try living as if it's the last year of your life. And it can teach you how to create an inspirational plan that'll get you jumping out of bed in the morning so that when you are living the last year of your life, you are fully in action and you know where you're going and what you want to make happen and what's really important to you. And all those videos are free. So go to thelastyearofyourlife.com and get them.
West Virginia we go. It's Robert's turn on Coast to Coast. Robert, good morning.
Good morning from West by God, Virginia. How are y'all?
All is well. Thank you, Robert.
Outstanding. It was something. I had plenty of time when I was in Iraq. I did 4 years there as a firefighter.
Thank you for your service.
Oh, thank you for your support. And I also did 30 years with the Washington, D.C. Fire Department. And I got to go all over the country. And I got to stand right there in the cradle of civilization. I stood on the Ziggurat Temple, which was right next to Abraham's house, which was near the Tigris and the Euphrates River.
Mm-hmm.
And something happened to me where I just thought, you know, when I get out of this, I'm going to go back and I'm going to thank all the people that were good to me in my life and ask for forgiveness for all the people that I have hurt in my life and forgive all the people who have hurt me.
Yes, that is so awesome, man. Those are two exact weeks that we do. Forgiving yourself for the things that you've done, forgiving the people who have hurt you. When you can forgive the people who have hurt you, I call that walking through the portal to unlimited personal power.
Gosh, but that's not easy, Clint. That's the hard part, isn't it?
That is the hardest part. And you will see, I'm having a live event in Las Vegas on the 27th, 28th, and 29th of January. And one of the speakers I'm having, you probably saw him on Oprah. When he was 6 years old, his father and his stepmother kept him imprisoned in a closet in a steel cage. And I met that man a couple weeks ago, and I said, man, have you ever thought about forgiving the people who trespassed against you like that? And he goes, what do you mean? And I'm like, well, don't you find yourself muttering and saying how much you resent them while you're driving around town? He goes, yeah, I used to do that a lot. And I'm like, until you forgive the people who have committed crimes against you, you are a prisoner of those crimes. And when you want to become free and when you want to have total power, if you could forgive the people who committed the crimes against you, what could you not accomplish? That is how you get power as a person. With forgiveness.
Bill in West Hartford, Connecticut. Hey, Bill, go ahead.
Yes, hi, Clint. Hi. You mentioned passion in one's life. I've had a passion since I was a small boy, and George Norrie knows it, of the sciences, particularly astronomy, cosmology, and the world space programs, as well as skepticism of a religion. I am an atheist myself. My point is, I've had since age 14 OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder, so I went to college, but I did not finish college, University of Hartford. My point is, so since I could not be a PhD astronomer and help the country, our country and the world through science as a PhD, what I've done instead is what I'm doing now, calling up radio talk shows to talk about logic and reason and atheism, as well as astronomy and cosmology and the space program. And I've done this as far back as 1978, when I used to call it the late night radio Larry King show between 1978 to 1990. And I've called up Coast to Coast AM between late 1995 until now.
Hey, man, if that's your passion, then amen to you. You have to identify what's important to you and focus on it and make it happen. Because, hey, man, if you were laying in the gutter tomorrow and you realized that your life was slowly fading out, you would know that you were following your true calling all the way because you were following your passion as recently as tonight. So good for you, baby.
Clint, I've always said that sometimes I want to live as if it was my last day of my life, but maybe I need to expand it out a little bit farther, huh?
Here's a real good question for you, George. What if this was the last 15 seconds of your life? What would you do?
The last 15 seconds?
Yeah.
God, I would hate to have dead air on the radio. I don't know.
Right? Did you straighten up? Did you feel yourself straighten up your spine a little when I asked you that question?
Well, 15 seconds doesn't give me much time.
No, it doesn't. It just gives you a moment to express yourself as a human being. And every time I think about that question, I always stand up straighter.
I do a quick goodbye to everybody listening, and that would be it. Sayonara.
I would say I love my wife, Allison. I love you.
Let's take one or two more calls, time permitting. Let's go to Robin in Poto, Oklahoma. Real fast, Robin, go ahead.
Hi, George.
Hi.
I'm sorry about your dad.
Thank you.
Sorry. He's up there with my dad. I just know it.
They're up there causing trouble, aren't they?
Oh, yeah. you know what I'd like to do? I'd like to travel all over the country and just meet people. Because
I love people.
That's what you need to do, right?
Mm-hmm.
You need to do.
What are you waiting for, you know? You got a limited amount of time here, and people are the richness of life, the relationships. In our program, we cover two different ways. We talk about having deep connections with family and friends, and then we have a really interesting topic, which is connecting with strangers. And some of the most empowering and powerful experiences of our lives happens from connecting with strangers. One guy in the program last year, he met a man on the beach in Mexico. That stranger ended up building his dream home for him. He was a famous architect.
That is magic. Hey, Clint, we've got to run. TheLastYearOfYourLife.com. I'm George Norrie. Back in a moment as we go behind the secret door. Thanks, Clint.